Thank you all for coming. Let's begin. Does everyone have a chance to look at the minutes? Do you want to take the time? And then I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes.
I will move to accept the minutes of June 10th.
Okay, is there a second?
Okay.
Okay, okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, great. The next thing on the agenda is Tim Rose and the RRA report. Charlie, of course, is here too.
Well, I think we had a successful Delaware tour. And I got a lot of positive feedback, you know, from those who attended and were able to make it. So I think that went well. The only other thing, real thing to bring up is we sent out a second letter to the towns, which I copied the Senator's committee on.
And I think it's in the packet as well.
Oh, it was in the packet? Okay.
A sample, the one that went to Kingston.
Yeah, that's all I did. I sent the city of Kingston letter to as a copy, but knowing very well that it went out to every chief elected official in the county, all supervisors and mayors, I should say, all 24 of them. But what happened, you know, since the last meeting, we sent an initial proposal out to the towns on what we needed to break even financially on our end for the town service of the transfer stations. Charlie and I met with the Town Supervisors Association after that, and they raised some concerns on the fact that the contract expires in 6 months at the end of the year, and they had wanted additional time. So after that, Carl Chipman, who's supervisor of Rochester and also president of the association, came to the board meeting and formally addressed the board and asked the board that they get a that they can have a 1 year reprieve. So in other words, another 6 months tacked on to the end of the contract, which will bring us to June 30th. And the board discussed it, agreed that they would do that. And so hence the June 30th letter that you've seen copies of. The highlights in there are on January 1, the tipping fee for the towns will be raised to whatever the private sector is. And right now we're doing our budget. I don't know. Currently it's at $103 a ton. So, but I don't know what it's going to end up being after we do our budget this year. It's probably going to be plus or minus that $2 or something like that. It'll be right in that ballpark. So I don't anticipate any large increases or decreases for that matter. But it should be right around the probably 2 or 3% range ballpark. So the town or the board of directors insisted that raise January 1. The pull charge, in order to break even, we really need $62 a pull, but the board decided to keep it at 43, even coming into the 6 months of next year. So that 43 will remain in effect for 1 year until June 30th. And there won't be any box metal, as in the initial letter, because we're not going to purchase any equipment. Now, I did put in the letter that we are running out of boxes, and you know, service could be delayed at some point because we're not going to buy any new boxes because we don't even know if the towns are going to stay on or not. So it's hard to plan for capital purchases if you don't even know they're going to be around. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been struggling with over the past couple of years, you know, whether or not they're going to sign on or not going to sign on. We really don't know. So we basically gave them a drop-dead a date of June 30th, 2015 to make up their mind. If they don't all sign on by that date, then we'll just dissolve the roll-off business and sell off the assets.
Does that mean it's an all or nothing when you say if they don't all sign on?
Right, and that's something the board decided. Because what could essentially happen is that numbers could really get skewed if half of them drop out and half of them stay in. The costs are going to shoot way up. And it's really to make it work financially to keep the cost down for everybody. Everybody's going to have to sign on. You know, it's more buying power, so to speak.
Is it the board's position, and I guess it's a question for Charlie too, is it the board's position that if all but one sign on say that it's really truly an all or nothing? I mean, is that line?
That's currently the way it's written.
Yeah. Okay.
See, we have to wait for their response at this point in time, Tracy. We heard their concerns when we went to their meeting, and I came back to the board and explained to the board. And the board pretty much, if you read the revised letter, pretty much jumped through hoops for them and said, okay, we'll give you an extension of time, and we want to know what you're going to do here, here, and here. Do you have a copy of that letter?
I have an emailed copy, but I'd love another hard copy.
Well, I could have one made. Here, Jay, is that something you can do?
Sure.
Okay. You can make a couple of them. That's the letter we're talking
about. It might be the same one. I'm not sure. The June 30th. Yeah, we have the June 30th.
Oh, you have it? Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
So right now, we're at a standstill to wait for their response to this letter. And then we'll address it.
Essentially, the way we look at this is that there were 20-year agreements that were signed. And they held up their end of the bargain for 20 years, and we upheld our end of the bargain. And now that 20 years is up, it's been extended in the past couple of years. But now you're either going to have to sign up for another 10-year, or to make it work financially, we ran the numbers at 5 years, and this cost was just too high. It's got to be spread over 10 years. And or we can, like I said, we can just, if they want to go their way and do their own hauling or third party to do it, or whatever they decide to do, that's up to them. We are going to meet with the supervisors on July 15th, which is next Tuesday. We're going to have a tour of the agency on Tuesday morning.
That's at 8:30.
The supervisors always hold their meetings the third Tuesday of the month at the Olympic Diner on Washington Avenue. They asked to have their meeting at the agency, and of course I agreed. So that would be fine. They also asked for another tour. I gave them a tour.
When is the date for
Tuesday
July
morning?
15th, next Tuesday.
Okay.
So I'll be on vacation with my family in Lake George, but I'll be driving back. I'll be leaving there probably about 5:30 in the morning to get down here, so don't be surprised if I'm in shorts and sunglasses. I'm not going to dress in a tie. I'm not going to dress in a tie and everything like I normally do. So, because right after that, I'm going to head right back and be with my family. So, they want to discuss it more. So, when I first became executive director, I invited them to have one of their meetings at the agency, and they liked that. They came to the agency, they took a tour of the agency, and I know there's some new supervisors since then. That was in 2011. I became director in fall of 2010, so it was in 2011. They came and they did that. So one of the supervisors suggested that we do another tour, and it also is going to give them opportunity to, Charlie's going to be there as treasurer of the board, and Leon Smith is going to be there as chairman. So I just can't have three board members, so otherwise we got a quorum. But
right.
But the two of them decided to come, and that way they can speak for the board, I can speak as administration, mm-hmm. and they can answer policy questions, and I can answer more direct financial questions, numbers. So it'll be Tuesday morning.
Are all the towns going to be required to sign 6-month extensions for that little period?
We haven't discussed that. We've discussed that informally, mm-hmm. Myself with a board member here and a board member there. I don't know. I don't know at this point. I know the couple of discussions I had, one person indicated, well, we probably don't need to do that. We'll just let it expire, because if the town wants to get out in February, they find another option. They don't want us at that point. They can leave. They want to be able to give them that flexibility.
It could be a verbal agreement based on the letter.
It could be.
I mean, because here it is in writing.
But I did have one board member say maybe we should look at doing something formal, just because we've done extensions in the past.
Mm-hmm. And in the past, they've been formalized.
They've been formal. All basically is a two-page sheet saying that the solid waste management agreement is now extended 1 year. And then the next one was now extended for 15 months, mm-hmm. to get us to the end of this point. So we could do it that way. I mean,
yeah. There's precedent for it.
There is precedent for it. And it's something we have to discuss internally, but it hasn't been discussed at any length with the entire board.
I think the extension is wise, but the problem with deadlines is people wait till the deadline to make a decision. And I don't like the idea that service could be delayed because no one has committed.
Right,
you know, it seems to me that every effort should be made to have a decision well before then so that you can start roll-off purpose. Because those roll-offs are not just, you don't just call up and say, I want 6 roll-offs. They're usually, they have to be built for you.
Yeah. And they're ordering 43 in the first year.
Yeah. So, and again, you know, we had this discussion last time a little bit about how the disproportionate impact, you know, the haulers that are closer, or rather the municipalities that are closer, are likely to get better offers than the municipalities that are more distant. And then, you know, that's going to put them and the agency at a disadvantage. You know, I feel like we have a system that's not broken and that we're opening it up to any possible combination that, and I also think that some of the towns, the agency is under a lot of scrutiny, and the haulers can make a very good offer to begin with. And then once they have the customer sort of over the barrel, they can change that offer, and then the agency is sort of the fallback, you know, the collector of last resort.
Now, what is broken is the boxes, and you might want to look at these because that's what brought it to a head. The insurance company pretty much put a gun to the head of the RRA and said, you've got to act or we're going to have serious problems.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's what's broken.
I'm keenly aware of that. But, you know, my sense is the municipalities don't fully appreciate the value of the service that they've received for the last 20 years. And I think the private sector has plenty of business with their own private customers, with businesses and with residents that choose not to self-haul. But I'm really concerned about, you know, I don't know. I guess the best thing for me to do is get myself to a supervisors association meeting and make a plea for not only appreciation, but long-term participation.
Well, that would help.
I think, I think you raise a good point, Manna, and in terms of, which we've talked about over and over, and I know that the board is keenly aware, too, that those municipalities that are closer, when they start looking, bidding it out, might get a decent deal, if not a good deal, versus the municipalities that are further away are in no way going to be able to compete with, even with this increase, probably they're not going to be able to compete with what the agency's being at offer, you know, is offering them. And when it becomes an all or nothing deal, I mean, it raises the question of how then, and I'm not criticizing that suggestion, I'm just thinking out loud, then how then do we address it? And, you know, one member of our committee who's not here, I know, has mused about the idea of the county, because again, we're talking right now about the private sector subsidizing the public sector. That's what's been happening in since flow control. So what one member of this committee's mused about is the idea of, once again, having the county subsidize for the municipalities in the form of, however you put it, a net service fee or whatever, to make it even. Because I don't know how, And it's something we're going to, I mean, we're going to have to discuss with the board moving down if it does come up, because meaning the board of the agency, because I certainly don't know how, you know, a community 50 miles from the agency is going to compete with a community 2 miles away. It's just not, I mean, it's not an even playing field. But I do understand why you've put the prices at an even par, not the real cost. So it's a problem. And I hope the same vein that Mana does, that everyone, all the towns, don't wait until, you know, June 25th to make a decision of next year. You know, of next year, while everybody's sort of waiting, trying to figure out alternatives.
Tracy, we're speculating until we get an answer from them, because right now, if I were one of the town supervisors and read that letter, I would be looking at my options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and if the options are not better than what they've got now, which I think they may find out, I think you're going to see them knocking on our door and come back and say, hey, let's do this thing.
But maybe not all of them. That's the thing, when it's an all-or-nothing deal,
right.
You might, the town of Ulster, just to, you know, pick one, might get a better deal. And so if the town of Ulster says no, and that scraps the whole deal, if, you know, that's something, you know, something the agency board is going to have to grapple with. I don't know. I've also read the newspaper reports of, and I haven't spoken to them personally, but of supervisors frustrated with the tipping fees and characterizing them in all different light and language, and the tipping fee going up. One thing I don't fully understand, and I guess I'll get it better when I see the numbers, but I don't understand. I support the flat tipping fee. I've said that over and over and well on the record from the start, from the first discussions of flow control, but I don't understand how raising the tipping fee to a flat level wouldn't lower the overall tipping fee even just a bit, because if right now you're getting less for all the municipalities' waste, and all of a sudden that waste comes in at a higher price, wouldn't the aggregate go down even just a little bit? I'm confused.
The higher price is to offset increased expenses against the agency. That's what happens. So that's already been spoken for, that increase. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't understand that.
Well, if you look at it this way, if we budget 120,000 tons, mm-hmm. all right, I think next year we're looking at probably, we did about 118. Five last year, I think we were probably going to budget around 118 for this year. But let's use 120 for argument's sake. Mm-hmm. For every dollar you save, for every $120,000 you save in the agency, you can reduce it by $1. So, if this is not an exact science, I've talked to guys that are in the business literally 30 and 40 years, and the one common theme that I have been told over and over again by these people that have been in the business forever is you can never predict the garbage. I don't care. You cannot tell me what you're going to bring in tomorrow.
Right.
You can try to estimate. That's what we all do. That's what the private sector does, but you can never know it.
No, I try to predict.
It's trying to predict the Dow. So if we lost 72,000 last year, mm-hmm. and it takes 120,000 to fluctuate a dollar either way, it's not, you're talking 70 cents.
But what percentage of the waste is municipal versus private right now?
About 15.
15.
So you're talking a very small percentage of waste.
Yeah.
But even if you keep that 15% out, the number we came up with was 72,000. If you come up with 72,000, if you're thinking in numbers terms, it would adjust it, you know, 70 cents.
Right.
67 cents on $103 a ton. We don't break it down to $103.62. It's even $103, $104, $105.
Right.
Because when you go into these projections, it gets, if you're off a few thousand ton either way, it's going to skew that, which you very well could. Which mm-hmm. comes back to the whole comptroller's argument that we should have that 15% or so of operating reserves in the bank, double or triple what a municipality has, just for that reason. Because the comptroller's argument is, and rightfully so, that with garbage, it could fluctuate, it could swing huge. It could be a huge swing over the course of a year. You can budget for 120,000. The economy drops. You don't bring in 100. That's a big, big number. Mm-hmm. So you got to be able to have that money in the bank, or it can go the other way.
Right.
All of a sudden, we got an excess of $800,000 that we didn't anticipate because the economy picked up and everybody's buying new stuff and throwing the old stuff out.
You know, from your lips to God's ears.
Yeah. Right. And it depends on the, you know, it depends on what the Dow's doing, you know. And
deal with that problem.
And so we're, it's like the stock market, we can predict an issue. We can do our best. We did pretty well last year. We predicted 120. We pulled in 118.5.
Right.
So we were pretty close. But overall, so to answer your question, that was a long way of saying, does that fluctuate? Is it really going to make a difference? I mean, it could.
But I mean, 15% of 120,000 without a calculator, you know, you have 18,000 tons that you're getting X amount more per ton, and using your math on the every 120,000, that should lower it by $7.
It might lower it a dollar.
I mean, what's the increase right now, the proposed increase for the municipalities, for the self-haul, for the non-self-haul municipalities?
Is $10 a ton.
Right, so $10 a ton, that's a dollar and
but,
a half.
But
so.
Also, too, I have this year that I have to replace a loader. Our capital, if you look at our five-year capital plan, we only estimated, I think it was around $350,000 we had to spend this year for replacing our equipment. Next year, it's over $700,000.
Yeah.
The one loader alone, depending on where we buy, is going to be between $300,000 and $400,000.
Yeah.
So unless we start going deep into debt, like the agency always
right.
has, then you got to look at that tipping fee and say, you know what, you're going to have to raise it $3 just to pay for a loader.
Yep.
That'll last 7 years, 6 years. So just that one piece of equipment skews it off. So, you know, that's why you start factoring all this stuff in, and we're just now making the budget. So I don't know where it's, I mean, right now, preliminarily, it doesn't look like there's going to be a huge fluctuation either way. But I won't know until we complete it. And then of course, it has to go to the board, you know, for their blessing. And they may turn around and say, no, we want to spend more money on recycling, or we're going to spend less on recycling, or whatever the case is.
Right.
But they're going to ask me to tweak it, and I got to tweak it to make it work for what the board wants for policy, for their policies. So, you know, when all that shakes out, I'll come up with a tipping fee, and I can't tell you. Oh, and the other thing, too, by the way, I'm leaving out probably the most important part, and it's important, this is in the minutes, because mm-hmm. right now we're out to bid for final disposal, yeah. and that's huge. I mean, that's a vast majority of our budget in the agency. A vast majority of our budget is the T&D, the trucking and disposal. So with that thing laying out there right now, the bids for the final disposal aren't going to be open until July 25th. And then we have to go out for the trucking on that. So right now we're doing our preliminary budget and we're assuming that the numbers are going to be the same as they are now. I don't know. They could swing more, they could swing less.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know, and that's why this is a very preliminary budget.
Yeah.
How long a time period?
5 years.
5 years. Yeah. And I have a concern about the all or nothing nature. It says if all municipalities that currently have a solid waste agreement
because not all municipalities have a solid waste agreement.
Don't agree to a 10-year contract, you'll be forced to dissolve. What if the city of Kingston and 50% of them are, you know, why does it have to be all or nothing? Why did the agency decide? I mean, I happen to agree that all should, but I don't understand why you're giving everyone a choice and then saying,
all, but if it's not, when the numbers come in, we'll reevaluate what we're doing.
Okay.
And depending on the preponderance of four or not, what deals we could probably make, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's very likely. Let me put it this way: if half of them sign on, half don't. Assuming the half that are going to sign that don't sign on are going to be the closest. The remaining half, those numbers are going to be
through
the roof, because now you're spreading it among nine. But
I mean,
you don't have to buy as much. I do understand that you don't have to buy as many roll-offs.
Yeah,
but now you're traveling
trucks and
a lot of fuel. And right now, it's evenly spread across everybody, so everybody's taking a little bit of a hit and trying to equalize it. But if you have these ones that are far away, those numbers will go through the roof.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that was my earlier question. I would urge the board, because the language in the letter is really extreme, saying if they're not if everyone doesn't sign, then we'll be forced to dissolve. I would just urge the board to at least think along the lines of, if everyone doesn't respond, we'll be forced to reconsider what the agreement is that
Tracy,
we're offering.
We put a best-case scenario in that letter. That's what we would like to see happen, everybody on board.
Okay.
But if it doesn't happen, then we've got to reevaluate our position.
Yeah.
And we'll be
flexible. I hope that the board will at least listen and also be clear to the supervisors to that extent. As to the meeting on the 15th, Manna, I know you expressed interest in going to the supervisors' meeting, and I'd like to try to make it. I'm not sure, but we're going to all need this committee's going to need to communicate to be certain the same problem with the board members that we don't have more than two people going. So,
I can't go.
Okay.
And if I could just
I'm
make
not
a
sure
suggestion,
that I can either.
You may just want to reach out to Carl Schumann since it's his meeting. And he's the president.
I will. I will. I think the supervisors' meetings are, they tend to be, open to the extent that, but I will just, as a courtesy as well, if anyone's coming.
Okay.
But I think we just all need to communicate. You're saying you can, but if, I know that Rich, I believe, will be back then, but I don't know if he's going to be able to go, because if he's back, I assume he's going to be working, so I'll check with Ken.
Is this a tour, or is this another Olympic Diner meeting?
No,
both.
It's
a meeting and tour, but
it's at the agency.
It's not at the Olympic Diner.
It's at the agency.
Their meetings are normally at the Olympic Diner.
Yeah.
But they asked to have the meeting at our agency, and then
Those who want to can stay for a tour.
That's correct.
Okay.
So
8:30.
8:30 Tuesday morning on the 15th. Yep, at the agency.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for getting the letters to us. Appreciate it. Stay in touch. And have a nice vacation.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, you will not be at the August meeting, correct? You've been telling us that
right,
for months.
Yeah.
Okay.
The August meeting, I'll be in somewhere between West Virginia and South Carolina someplace. So,
great.
Maybe Maryland. Assateague Island with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Well,
all sounds good.
See the wild horses.
Tracy, I need those photos back if I can have that, please. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
I hope I've done better in the last 15 years than these roll-offs have.
Oh, you have. Let me assure you.
Okay.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Moving on, I'd like to introduce everyone to Marilyn Manos-Jones, who's here to talk to us. We have quite a lot of information about.
You can start talking, and I'll just go down there and make packets.
Thank you.
Okay. Just so few of you that I could put four together.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
And then
yes.
I'll do
and then
the
we
rest.
Jay
the
was very kind. I'm so glad I got here early, but I wanted everyone to have as much information about this topic. I know everyone has a lot on their agendas, but I'm here to discuss protecting pollinators. So first, I thought I'd start out with very briefly saying who I am and why I should be talking about this. Butterflies have inspired my life for over 40 years. I've been raising and releasing butterflies starting in 1972. In 73, I started tagging them for the Insect Migration Association because at that time, scientists knew where that monarchs from Canada and the United States migrated to Mexico, but nobody knew where. I work for Dr. Urquhart. I'm a citizen scientist. I'm not a scientist. But after 40-some-odd years of working with the best monarch scientists in the world and being very involved, I have a lot of information to share. In 1977, I went to Mexico searching for the place where the monarchs overwintered, and I spent 2 months doing that and found them on the first day of spring. About 100 million monarchs mating on the first day of spring. I've gone back to Mexico almost every year since then. I've been the only woman. I was the second person. Dr. Urquhart actually was the first to find the monarchs. I was the second. I've been going back to Mexico almost every year since then. Now, I've been the only person ever allowed to live among the butterflies, which the United Nations has declared a World Heritage Site. When I lived among the monarchs, and in 78 and 79, and I've lived with the mountain people, I explored with my guide about 50 or 60 acres, and there are 13 mountaintops at that time, with hundreds and hundreds of millions of monarchs. And I won't even try to describe or use adjectives, but it's a sacred place, to say the least. And I made a vow for the great privilege that I had to protect the monarchs and the people in the mountains. I started negotiating in 79 with the Mexican government to protect the monarchs from deforestation, which was already happening back then. We won't even go to that story. That's a long and sad tale, but it keeps on going. Now, that's... and I searched for many years, and I worked with a Mexican partner and the campesinos in who live in the foothills of those mountains, and helped plant over 6 million trees with the campesinos to, because poverty is an ecological disaster, to help them and teach them sustainable reforestation and protect the monarchs all at the same time. Now, I went to Mexico in January of this year, 2014. I hadn't gone for 3 or 4 years because the situation in Mexico, the violence and the anarchy is truly, truly out of control. The Mexican government can say, everything is wonderful, just invest your money, and the 400 richest families in Mexico are doing quite well. But the rest of the country, I have never experienced anything quite as dismaying in both the ecologically and with the people. So let's start with back with the monarchs. I will say that I went because I have godchildren in the mountains, my original guide's great-grandchildren, and his mother was turning 100, a woman I've known for 37 years, and I went to celebrate her 100th birthday. The whole pueblo makes a party. And of course I went up to the butterflies. So, two things. One is, when I first discovered the monarchs, there were 300 million. What is it down to? 3 million monarchs. They are the canaries in the coal mine. Because it's not just the monarchs. That's the doorway to saying, it's not just the monarchs, it's all the pollinators. And what a lot of information that I brought. I have been talking about this for years. For years. But we've reached a crisis point. And the crisis is so basic. It involves the safety of our food and the safety of our water. And without food or without water, we humans are dooming ourselves. So not only the numbers are down from 50 or 60 acres, it's down to 1 acre. And, of course, there are many, many factors. See, the day after I got back is when I initiated the Pollinator Friendly Towns project. The next day I went before the Olive Town Board. I had started that before, actually, but it just was like, it was beyond, it's beyond. It's really so crisis. All right, now, there are many factors, of course. Climate change is a big factor. When I found the monarchs on the first day of spring, with all of those monarchs mating, which is an incredible pas de deux, it's an amazing dance. Now, because of the climate change, the monarchs, that was the first day of spring. now the and I've been there, and they used to stay, made at the end of March and head north in mid-April. Now they're mating in February and heading north at the beginning of March. So they're, that's changed. And the people, many of the people in the mountain are not educated, but everything is passed down, tradition. And as far as back as anybody can remember, generations, the monarchs have always arrived on November 1st, Los Dias de Muertos, Day of the Dead. And the shaman, anyhow, have said that's, it's the monarchs of the old souls returning to the sacred mountains. For the last 2 years, they've come a week or two later. No one has ever can remember. All right. So there's that factor. And of course, there are many things influencing that, but what I'm here to talk about are human activities. And the human activities are what's causing the very dangerous loss of all our pollinators. So, I am from the town of Olive. I live in Chopin. And the town of Olive has passed a resolution and endorsed the Pollinator Friendly Towns Initiative. It's on, have you heard your package? Thank you so much,
You're
Jay.
Welcome.
Thank you. And basically the pledge, I have not asked anyone for a penny. No one is asking for any towns for any money or individuals, because every environmental group now has their hand out saying, give us money, we'll protect the pollinators. No, what I am asking is actually each individual to stand up and say, I take responsibility for the little piece of earth upon which I stand. I am asking every town to educate. I know that we cannot, and I will not ask you to ban pesticides. It's too big a fight. It's too big a business. It's a multi-billion dollar business. However, we can educate one another, and our officials should educate and be models. So, if you want to read this, the cover letter that I've given all of you. Nana Jo, are you with us on this?
Yeah.
And this weed killer works.
Well, get the vinegar and Epsom salts.
and a little Dawn.
A little Dawn or ivory.
Yeah.
You've tried it?
Yep. Yep.
How fabulous.
And you know, at the plaza, Kingston Plaza, that's what they use.
To kill the weeds.
Really?
Yes.
Because I was talking to somebody the other day, and I said, I smell vinegar. And he goes, yeah, that's what we use, vinegar. And then we said together what the rest of the formula was. Yep.
And that's from Donald Crawford, who's the head of the Ulster County Master Gardeners. Now, I'm a master gardener, and I went to them after last week, or as you probably all know, on July 19th, the New York City Department of Environmental Protection put out signs around the reservoirs that on the following day, June 20th, they were going to be spraying pesticides. One day, they didn't even let the towns know. So I got the information from Sylvia Roselle, our Olive supervisor, who somebody gave her a picture of the signs, and that's how we knew all the numbers to call. Lou Cardinale, Department of Transportation. I spoke to Adam Bosch, public relations, very smooth talker. And I was told that, we have scientists looking at the water. There's no pesticide in the water. Where I had just been told that very proudly, we have been doing this for 30 years, and we've just sprayed around every reservoir. And it's done all over New York State. And I said, well, I was very polite. I just asked if he had children. Because every child has pesticides in their blood. And 96% of all fish have pesticides. And you cannot tell me that you spray, the pesticide that they sprayed was Accord XRT2. Oh, it's not as heavy as Roundup. It contains glyphosate. Glyphosate, in all the reports that I have supplied you, kills bees and pollinators. And milkweed, which is the only source of food for monarchs. Mm-hmm. And
and they are dying back, you can see.
You can see.
We went, because I have a daycare and we hatch monarchs, we find them and we hatch them. Mm. And we went today looking, and all the areas on the side of the road where they are.
And this is another thing I would like to propose, that someone, actually a lovely artist, Tony Wiedenbacher of Woodstock, has made wonderful hand-painted little signs that are available. We can give them out to everybody. And some yellow tape to mark on the side of the road where there's milkweed.
Mm-hmm. That's funny, because I just said today we're going to have to mark this because they're going to be coming and cutting.
I have signs
for
you.
We have one beautiful patch of, a big beautiful patch of it.
All right, Mary, yes? Yep. I have signs for you to put up.
Good.
Absolutely.
Good.
I think it's about educating. We were all appalled after Olive has just taken this pledge to protect pollinators. That it's just sprayed. And then I'm told, oh, we spray it, but it doesn't go into the soil, it doesn't go into the water. I said, but it magically disappears. That's not possible. Scientifically, it just doesn't disappear after it kills things. And they're spraying, it's 25 feet from some people's wells.
And if it rains right after they do it, where do they think it's going to run?
Where does it run? Okay. The next part of this.
Yeah, I just want to say that I have noticed I always, when I mow, I watch for where the milkweed is and I don't mow it. And I have lots of milkweed, but no monarchs this year at all.
Not yet so far. Not one. Last year, I have fields. All right. I have butterfly gardens. Extensive in Shokan. In fact, I'm having a butterfly and pollinator garden tour this Sunday, to which I invite each of you. And I'll get that to you in 10-point REL. Not the joke. Yeah. And, but you know something? When I send it to you, your email bounces back to me. I don't know why.
That's
even when I hit reply, but I'll try again. Okay. It's not only our government that's doing it. Lawns, ladies. Yeah. Gentlemen. Lawns. We have 33 million acres of lawns in the United States. Lawns use more pesticide per acre than big agriculture. Dandelions must kill. Where do they... It's an inordinate amount of pesticides being used on our lawns. And I have to believe that if people are educated, that they do not want to be the source of killing 87% of all local species with their Roundup on their dandelions and having a perfectly green lawn, which I think is... I don't know, the word despicable is good enough. It's dead. We are creating dead zones around where we live. And that's same for housing developments, where they cut down every native plant and species, put up some boxwoods, perfectly green lawns. What have they created? Dead zones. So, now, another part of the puzzle is... You know, all I can pray is that when people are presented with scientific fact, that their that you know, some people won't let fact get in the way of their opinion. So, but let's hope we can educate enough.
Like our conversation the other day.
We can educate enough people. That's why I brought so much information for you, that because we all have to be very well informed about this topic. I mean, there's so much you all have to be informed about everything. But this is, it's really, it's urgent. It's at that point. Okay, Town of Olive is the first one I put the letter that they endorsed. President Obama last week created a federal strategy, an interagency strategy to promote the health of honeybees and other pollinators. it's on a national level. Michelle, which is fabulous, and I gave you the whole shebang of what he, it's right here, of his, what he created. Then, now, also what I am doing, and I think is part of the piece of this puzzle, in the town of Olive, I'm working with 4-H girls, and we've created a model pollinator garden in front of the Olive Library. And what I would like to see as part of this package, if at all possible, is to encourage each town. There are fabulous gardeners in each town. There are fabulous garden resource centers in each town where people can choose. I'm working with 4-H girls. There must be a couple of gardeners in each town who would be willing to work with some 4-H girls, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts. Get everyone involved. Schools. I would love to see pollinator gardens at every school.
Our
learning experience.
Our elementary school has a garden.
Where's?
Grandy Morris in Blue Mountain. Saugerties.
Huh. Well, I do many presentations for schools. I'm really fabulous with kids.
Yep.
But
they have nice, they have a whole bunch of gardens.
Fabulous.
Oh, yeah.
All right, my Pollinator Friendly Towns Initiative, I have this website, .org. Over 1,000 people have signed on to pledge to protect pollinators, and schools have signed on to, and libraries, and it's now also international. People from Brazil, England, France, Italy, Spain, people are coming or signing on because in here also Europe is losing 25% of its bees and is very concerned about the loss and how that will affect its agriculture and its food production. And Europe has also banned pesticides that kill bees. So Syngenta, I think is the name of the company, it's also in here, is the one who's making the pesticide, one of the pesticides that kills the bees. They're suing the European Union because they want to sell their pesticides and their profit is more important than food for all of humanity. Okay, so that's another part of it. I will say that insects and plants have taken millions of years to evolve relationships. For instance, the monarch, the sole food for its caterpillar is the milkweed, which contains a cardiac glycoside. It's a poison that's ingested into with the caterpillar and is passed on to the body of the monarch, which makes the monarch poisonous to most birds and predators. And all our insects and pollinators have evolved relationships with particular plants that have taken millions of years. Those lowly little weeds, like the violet, it's our great spangled fritillary, like the plantain, the buckeye, like our parsley, dill, or fennel, just for instance, black swallowtail. But so when we cut down the wildflowers, when we just cut down and poison everything, what is a weed? A weed is just something we haven't planted, but it's a gift. And I like to say that our planet is like the goose that laid the golden egg, because we humans did not invent gold or oil or diamonds or rubies or food or medicine. It was a gift that our planet gave to us that sustained life. And we are killing the goose that lays the golden egg. We have a beautiful planet. 2% of our water is drinkable, potable. And we're not using our water supplies wisely. Look at, I would say golf courses use pesticides to keep it green and inordinate amount of water. I could go into fracking. I have on my PowerPoint presentation, you look at a fracking, it's a moonscape. No pollinators live anywhere near there, I can assure you. And it's just been proven that fracking is causing a massive amount of earthquakes in Oklahoma. where there's a lot of fracking. And fracking, the wells usually last 5 or 6 years, and then it runs out. They've moved on, and everything is poison. Anyone who had a home anywhere near there, he's lost everything. But that's another story. But it's just all parts of the puzzle, because we're just doing so much to destroy as much as we can, as fast as we can, to get as much money as we can. So, here we are. Okay.
Marilyn, is the main, in terms of what we can do, is the main request to sign on or have a resolution
to protect pollinators. Okay. Now, there's something else that, as it is, as the town of Olive and Shantaken have done. All right. This evening, the town of Olive is also discussing part B of this, which I have in here, which I'd like to add. Cooperstown is the first town to just passed a moratorium on the DEP, the New York State, and from anybody from spraying pesticides for a year. Let's see what we can come up with as a solution to kill the pesticides, because you don't want the guardrails blocked, etc.
They passed a moratorium on other...
On let's say they don't want pesticides sprayed on their roads.
I'd love to. I mean, we need to look it up and
Rosendale
see. Rosendale
did that years ago, and for many years the county honored it. And then a few years ago, I started seeing signs of Roundup in Rosendale again. As a matter of fact,
the county or the state?
The county.
Because doesn't the county have a ban on pesticides on county property? I believe that.
Our interactions were with the county, not with the state, and it was county roads. And hopefully that's still in place. And maybe what I was seeing was on state roads.
We definitely need to look it up, because my first thought is I think that the county does have a ban.
They mow, but they're not
on pesticides
spraying.
And herbicides.
So, well, that ban just meant nothing because New York City.
No, but the point is that the ban is on county property, and that's why I questioned the Cooperstown moratorium. I'm just not sure of our jurisdiction. I mean, sure, we could pass a moratorium, but I don't know if the state. We don't have authority over the state to tell the state that they can't.
But what I don't know if you can either. But I know that Olive Town Board is taking it up tonight, and as a possibility. And I don't know if we. All I can say is our little tiny town of Olive, with 5,000 people, is taking a leading role in this, and I would love to see Ulster County take a leading role. I think it's great for tourism. Hello? It can't be bad for business. Come to the most pollinator-friendly town, county. Mm-hmm. We don't use, whatever. I don't know, but that's an ad campaign right there.
I just had dinner at Panera Bread, and people were sitting there eating, and they had Roundup. That's what they were spraying, the cracks and all the different stuff.
While we
were inside, my daughter and I are like, there are people sitting at the table, and around that, around the edge of their table, they're going around.
Oh, heaven forsooth, there should be a bug.
But it's just like crazy. I mean, but they could be using the vinegar thing. They don't need to be using anything.
Exactly. So it's
especially spraying when people are eating. That's just crazy.
Well, it's people. That's what I mean. More pesticide per acre, because people use it indiscriminately. Mm-hmm. They don't know what they're doing. I have to believe they can't be conscious. Otherwise, why would they be doing that?
Well, look,
if you went there with your daughter and she was playing on the ground, by the grass there, you wouldn't think anything of it. There was nothing. Yeah. Usually, at least there's little signs that says that it was just sprayed or whatever. But this was, the guy just went through and did the whole thing. And I looked to see whether he was wearing a Panera Bread shirt or whether he was a exterminator. And he was Panera Bread. Boy.
What was he wearing?
It was Panera Bread shirt. He's an employee for Panera Bread.
Oh, Panera Bread! Dumber and dumbest.
Which is funny, I was on my way here.
I think the first step is to find out, for us to confirm what we have in place in the county.
Yeah.
And then I mean, and that's for many reasons, both to inform ourselves and also to address what you're saying about Rosendale, but also assuming it's in place, this would be an easier resolution to move because it's just reaffirming what already exists. But I also think that we should look into the idea, and I'll check into Cooperstown, but I'd like to look into the idea of a moratorium. I mean, I'm always a proponent of pushing the envelope, even if we don't have authority or jurisdiction, you know, just to get it out there. But I'd like to know, you know, where our authority really ends. Like, I don't know that we can tell the state they can't spray on state land. I'm not sure. I mean, we can tell them, but I don't know if we have the authority to hold them accountable to it. I'm not sure if it's in the county.
I mean, I will tell you that Adam Bosch of Soil and Water, I'd like to is that what he is? No, I forget. I had his exact title.
Gary Capella, Soil and Water. Right. I know you spoke to Gary, too.
I spoke to as many people as I could.
Mm-hmm. But if it's a threat to health and welfare, you might be able to. That might be, you know, the way around it.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a little modification in the language that might, I'm not sure if this is going to be the basis for a resolution or not, but we pledge not to use herbicides, pesticides, or fungicides which are toxic to pollinators. That's, you know, I found something for poison ivy that has eucalyptus and cloves, and it works beautifully.
To kill poison ivy?
In fact, I'm going to try the vinegar and Epsom salts and detergent on my poison ivy. But I'm always looking.
This year. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
What's happening with poison ivy right now?
And the oil that's in it, I forget how to say it, is stronger because of the global warming. I've always been immune to poison ivy.
Until last year.
Until a couple of years ago.
And it doesn't die in the winter. People think just because there's no leaves that there's no... But that oil is on the vine.
I mean, but it's crazy.
So if you touch
that
vine, even in the winter, you get it.
It looks like a field of green leaves, and you get close, and it's acres of poison ivy.
My boyfriend pulled all the stuff. He's crazy. Pulled all the stuff down.
I had my neighbor do it.
Pulled all of it. He threw it in the back, and I looked, and it's all...
coming up.
It's rooted it rerooted itself.
You have to bag it and never burn it.
Never burn it.
Yep. Because you can...
It becomes airborne.
No, because you inhale the smoke, your lungs get poison ivy. It's very serious.
Yep.
I asked my neighbor, this is just a quirky aside, I asked my neighbor because he says he doesn't get it, to pull it down where it was on the house just so that my daughter wouldn't get it. And I said, are you still immune? And he reaches over, grabbed it, and ate it in front of me. I was like... Don't do that.
I just heard a professor that did that, and he was taken out on a stretcher in his class because he was saying, if you did whatever,
don't do that. He was fine.
He was fine.
It's still fine.
But there's also an herb before you work with it.
Jewelweed.
Is it good?
Jewelweed is the
answer.
Jewelweed grows right next to poison ivy. In fact, my property is covered with jewelweed.
Yep.
And Yule Gibbons, this is all important information that we all share. I made 2 years ago. It's about to flower. It looks like a little orange orchid,
and some of them are yellow.
Yellow and orange. And when they were all in bloom, filled a huge pot with it. Filled it with water. Yule Gibbons recipe. Boiled it down to very little. Strained it, and then froze it in ice cube trays. Where I put it in bags in my freezer, so whenever I'm near poison ivy or think I've touched it, I start to itch, I go to my freezer, I take a jewelweed ice cube, rub it.
Really?
Yeah. And the antidote is right there next to the poison ivy.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
So,
but there's also an herb you can take if you know you're going to be working with it.
They
have it at Mother Earth. It's something about ivy something. A landscaper told me that.
Oh, so you
used to get it.
There's
something you take before you go out.
Pre-poison ivy.
There's ivy in the name, but if you ask them.
Homeopathic or what is this?
Yeah.
Homeopathic. All right, now, Mani Jo, what did you say was the weed killer?
I got it down at...
What is that? Eucalyptus?
It has eucalyptus and cloves in it. And I use thieves as a cleaner, so when I saw this, and they said it was really effective. And it has some very safe oils in it. But it works amazingly well. I just put it in I can send you the name of what it is. I got it down at Victoria's Garden.
You know, I was so careful about doing this, I forgot to put my website on.
So, you were saying to add the language that says...
Yeah, if we're going to do something with this, I think adding in which are toxic to pollinators. And, you know, that way, I mean, I have some peach trees that were like the Garden of Eden up until this year, and they bloomed, and then it didn't, nothing happened. So we're trying to work with Catskill Native Nursery and figure out why. But if there's some, I won't use anything toxic. Chances are it's a fungus.
Now, also, there's a thing in here is an article.
Some way I can control it in the future.
Is with that. I understand.
Or do you think it just wasn't pollinated?
Is it a technical definition?
That's a possibility.
Because
I'm going to try and get to the bottom of it. I'll let you know.
There's an article in here that was just in the New York Times about the toxic waste in our backyard. Now, I went to her website, and she included, she also has a pledge. She's a doctor. And how it's affecting, and all these things might be neural disruptors, all the pesticides we're using.
Well, as a parallel path, when you talk about lawns, I mean, I talked to veterinarians in the area over the last years since the cat came down with cancer. That was probably 10 years ago. And they said the numbers were going
out of this world.
Like, where they never saw an animal with cancer. And now, I don't, where I live, I don't spray anything, and consequently there are places where it's like out of control weeds, but I'm like, alright.
Well, I don't, because I do daycare. I don't ever want somebody to come back with, you know, get something, and, you know, we could do it, but you have to do a notification of the state, and, you know, but I...
Yeah, so I don't, so it's, you know, I mean, so my cat, but, you know, if our neighbors are, and the cats get out, and the animals, and it always struck me as so, like, the disconnect where I have friends whose animals have gotten cancer, and, you know, they have the beautiful lawns that you're just saying, it's like, but what do you look at them, they're at the ground, and their noses are, the dogs are burrowing in the dirt, I mean, right on the, right in that grass,
and your kids too,
it's so strange.
kids do
unbelievable
things.
And they need to eat dirt. Kids need to eat dirt. Actually, that builds up their immune system, except if they're eating poison. But to address what Mana Jo said, I think it is in this other website, and I said maybe that's something that would be good to put on a pledge, is that pledge not to use herbicides, except in very specific small instances when absolutely necessary. Like an electrician who reaches in and there's a wasp's nest, he can't work in there. He has to kill that wasp's nest. Absolutely. You know, we have to be reasonable.
And people might be more open to something where they feel that you're, you know, that it's not like you just can't.
Right, like it's not the all or nothing. And so I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I'd like to put in some kind of wording, except in very small amounts, if absolutely necessary or something. I'm not sure what that wording, I can think about that too.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of moving something like this, even if what we have on the books isn't specifically related to pollinators, just even for the possibility of getting the message out to the broader public. I mean, it's a great opportunity to take a stand.
Because most people don't know that milkweed is the only plant that it would, you know.
Yes.
Every time we have new kids, the parents don't really believe me. They look it up. And You know, but
So I do think that, you know, we have to... I want to approach this. I get very passionate about this topic.
It's a lifetime of commitment.
You know, and... I really could cry because I never thought in my lifetime I would see monarchs so threatened. I mean, they are the most ubiquitous. There are you know, it's really, it's beyond the pale at this point. And we all just, and I went to a conference at Cornell University on sustainable and organic gardening in a warming world. There is a synopsis of it on my website, on Spirit of Butterflies website. Actually, it contains a lot of great information. I almost made a copy of that, but I took pity. I took a little pity, and not too much pity on you, Jay, to make so many copies. But, you know, it also says at the conference, all these leading people who, from all over, it's really, we're at a point where it has to be grassroots. It has to be each one teach one. It has to be at a local level. This is an international problem, and it's very soon to, it is already an international crisis. It's starting, unfortunately, we're at such a point that it is now getting national attention. Oh, by the way, Michelle Obama, through, I work with Dr. Lincoln Brower, the world's leading monarch scientist, and he got it in through, Michelle Obama now has just started a model pollinator garden at the White House for the first time ever. And President Obama asked for this a report in 60 days or 90 days. We've got to protect the pollinators now. This is our food. So all I can say is it's not red, it's not blue, it's not left, it's not right. It's as basic as you get.
Well, I think
our food supply.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask that you provide us with a copy of the Cooperstown Resolution.
Let me make my notes. I will get that.
And
Cooperstown Resolution.
Because I think it's going to take a couple of passes at this to figure out what the best action. I think there's consensus that we should take some action, but we have to figure out what the most effective action is going to be. With some slight modifications, I love the pledge, but if we have jurisdiction to do something for all of Ulster County, whatever that be, you know, whatever the most appropriate steps to take, I think we should. So I think it means looking at Cooperstown and looking through some of this material, but it is as urgent in my opinion as, you know, I talk a lot about transitioning to a green energy economy for a lot of different reasons, but protecting our pollinators is really critical. You've emphasized the butterflies, and I think, you know, we've all experienced, hey, wait a minute, where are they? Are they coming? But also, you know, I know the beekeepers are really, really concerned. Chris Harp and...
Yes.
And all of, there's a fairly well organized group of people that are trying to support the honeybees.
It's my doorway has been the butterflies, but it has certainly extended to all the pollinators.
No, the colony collapse disorder is a major issue.
Yeah.
And now my gardens. Because when I moved here 10 years ago, I've had butterfly gardens, even in New York City, to provide for tough little New York butterflies, and they came. But I looked up all the butterflies in this area. There are about 70. And I planted all their host plants for their caterpillars and their favorite nectar plants. Those are what my gardens are. But of course, all the bees came. I have all different kinds of bees and dragonflies and hummingbirds and birds and snakes and frogs and toads. It's so alive. It's symphonic. Mm-hmm. We can have that. Now, I will tell you, I am very grateful that you're all receptive to this and I appreciate any support, and I will do whatever you need me to do to talk to anyone, present to anyone. I have an incredible PowerPoint presentation. I can talk for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour, 2 hours. I've done it all. I can talk for 3 days if you need. Yeah.
Well, I'll keep in, if you can get the Cooperstown resolution,
I will
that would
that.
Be great.
I'll talk to Sylvia Rozelle tomorrow.
And then...
Because she's the one who told me about it. Yesterday I went to the pre-board meeting.
Yeah, and we'll get the packet out to the other committee members, but then we'll start to talk about where to go to next. And maybe I'll even reach out to Kathy, to council, just to sort of get the sense, not the permission, but the sense of, you know, how far can we push the envelope.
Right, what are the boundaries? Right, because, as I said, I realize it's totally unrealistic to ban anything. We can't do that. We can't. I don't think. We're not at that point yet. The other point of this, about educating, 48% of all plants bought for gardens are bought in big box stores. Every plant is so laden with pesticide from its seed production to its vent that you bring home all these beautiful plants. I have a beautiful garden. Every bee and butterfly that lands in that garden is a dead bee and a dead butterfly. 48% of all plants are bought there. Now, I know that there are petitions and going around the internet to ask Home Depot and Lowe's to stop selling the pesticides. But the other thing, and I don't know where to put this in, is that anywhere anybody buys plants, so this way we don't target big box, any place anybody buys plants, just ask a simple question. Does this plant have pesticides? Because if it has pesticides, you're taking home a pollinator killer.
Somehow find some way to require that it's labeled. Because I find that even just asking the question, you might be talking to... the clerk
know.
Might not even know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much misinformation, just even within this committee, you know, with flow control. I told everyone how one of the, you know, the haulers spewed back to me, their clerk, you know, their person on the phone, the whole reason for the increase in rate, which was absolutely factually inaccurate. But, you know, you can't
control
action.
But it was their justification for what they were doing.
But the point being that if there was some way to require that all retailers label whether or not it has pesticides, that would be a different thing.
That would be a different thing, but that is something so worthy of pursuit. And I don't know.
On a larger scale even than just the county.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, to tell you the truth, I've started with my town. I'm going to the county. This is the first county. I want Ulster County to be a leader, just like Little Olive is a leader, Little Ulster is a leader. I'm going to Dutchess and I'm taking it to the state level.
Yeah.
And then I'm taking it as far as I can go. Mm-hmm. I'm on fire. I'm just on fire.
Well,
I've been doing
you.
This too long. It's too horrible. That's how I feel. It's like my mission. This is what I have to do. I just feel compelled or called to do this.
Thank you so much for taking the time and for bringing us all the information.
Thank
I
you.
Think we're not going to stop here. We'll move forward.
And I am open to any guidance, any information that you have. I'd be happy to provide any more information. And I know that Chopin's a bit out of the way for you all. But I invite you, whether on the 4 dates of my butterfly garden tour, but if you can't make those dates, I invite you personally, just give me a call. I would be happy. If you're going to be anywhere near that area, just stop on in, and I will be happy to share my gardens, because they're kind of beautiful. And also on my website, you can see just a little... pre-video clip of 10 minutes. They're part one and part two of the butterfly garden tours from last year are on 10 minutes of each. So it gives you a taste. And other, you'll see.
Okay.
You'll see.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All
right.
I would like to take a little bit of a step backwards to the minutes. I have a typo correction. And then I have a question on something. So the typos are on page 6, and you might want to do a spell check search, but the MRF is M-R-F, it's not M-E-R-F, and it appears halfway down the page. He discussed the MRF engineer report, and then the last two lines, again, I just noticed. So it's materials recovery facility. It doesn't have any in it.
Good night, keep cool.
Good night, too. Thank you. And then the a couple pages before, I was quoted as saying something. Let's see if I can find it. No, a couple pages after. And I don't remember what I said. Maybe somebody else does. There's a blank. It's on page 10 at the bottom of the page. Legislator Parity suggested having experts on solar in to present on the topic. Legislator Green spoke of blank and bringing in experts one at a time.
What are those groups called? The like the group buying?
The ESCOs?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is,
that's what you were talking about.
Yeah. ESCO is Energy Service Company, and they were created during deregulation. They're basically the middlemen between the generators and us. So it used to be the generator and the distributor were Central Hudson. They generated a lot of their power. They bought power off the grid, and they sold it to us. And then after deregulation, another category of energy providers was created, the energy service companies. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, they serve the consumer well because they buy in large quantity and they can keep the price down. But there's been some predatory work that the Attorney General has uncovered, particularly with low-income families where people are told there's going to be a fixed price and they don't read the small print and mm-hmm. it starts to inch up. There is a lot of, you know, for somebody who can't put in solar or have direct access to generating renewables, the idea is if you buy from an ESCO that has a portfolio of renewables that you might even end up paying a little more, but you know it's green energy.
I think that's what I remember you talking about, ESCOs, yeah. and saying like not to stick with a specific company, like it shouldn't be a specific company, it should be about because that's not really mentioned in here when I reread
yeah,
this. And we were talking about like specifically who the agreement was with for the county, but also educating ourselves about how these agreements work.
Right.
And you brought up, don't stick with just the one company because they're very different.
Right,
because you were making a broader point about
the county exec had said he was going to be buying 100%, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
and then it would just be,
I think somehow we need to correct that because my concern is, you know, we should find out who they're buying it from. Let me just see what this.
Well, why don't we? Can we make a note to Jay and we've moved on these, but we can revisit it next month, and in the interim,
create some language.
Crystal, look at the tape because it was
look
Krista,
at the tape yeah the, it, because you know, my guess is she did tape. If she has a blank
maybe
here
maybe you'll hear it differently than Krista did too, since it'll be totally fresh to you you know at this point, you know.
Right.
What I mean?
No, I got you.
And I'm not sure I would have suggested bringing them in one at a time
with this. Can't we reconsider it now, or can't we? We passed this already, but what do we do?
The other thing I'm...
Let's just talk procedurally for a second, since we passed this already.
Yeah.
I think it's fine to get it corrected, passed or not passed. But procedurally, I'm not sure
what the correct, what is it, like a motion to reconsider?
I think so.
So we would make a motion to reconsider, but then we wouldn't move the minutes right now, and we'd hold off pending, which probably would be the most correct thing to do.
Let's do that.
I would say.
Yeah.
So do you want to make a motion to reconsider?
I do.
No, is there a second? Okay.
Thanks.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So we'll hold off on the minute approval. We'll hold off on the minute approval. We'll look into that. It'll give, when we do reconsider it, Rich will be here. Was Ken here at this meeting?
Ken was.
No,
here.
He wasn't. So, but Rich will. I mean, Rich spoke quite a bit at this meeting, so he'll have a chance to weigh in also. I think it's fine.
Because he talked about solar energy, my concern is a lot of the initiatives that are called Solarize, they decide who the best solar company is, and it kind of decreases the value of competition.
Are you talking about the accuracy of the minutes now, or a larger concern?
I'm trying to figure out what.
I think if we're talking about the
either one of these things.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about the accuracy of the minutes, the thing to do is Jay can listen in turn before Krista comes back. But you should.
But maybe
listen
you
also,
could listen because it may make you realize what you were.
I mean, just go on
what your point was.
All right. Yeah. If we can get to a point, I can come in early and sit with.
She can go online.
You can go online and do it. It's online.
Oh.
Yeah, so you can go online
right.
And just, you have to fast forward. I think let's get them accurate, but then to the issue, I mean, I've only had minimal follow-up on this, so I will do that in the next month,
you'll follow up
to Ken Cornell and the executive's office asking about, you know, all the questions that we asked, which I spoke to Ken about briefly, but didn't put it on this agenda since we weren't going to have a
And that's in the next paragraph, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Because I do think that to the issues we were talking about, we do need to address those and continue to have that conversation for sure. Okay. So the next thing on the agenda is resolution number 222, which came back to us.
Yes.
That's the setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 6 of 2014, a local law to establish a sustainable energy loan program in the County of Ulster, to be held on Tuesday, August 19th at 7:05 p.m. So the date, is the date the same as it was?
Mm-hmm.
Just come back.
So
here.
You're
just
not actually
here.
Voting on resolution 222.
We're voting on setting a public
you're
hearing.
You're approving the local law, because only laws and rules can set a public hearing. So the local law was referred back to committee. So your committee, and we made this is like it's a special gold sheet just for you guys.
Okay.
To approve the local law, which will then allow laws and rules to set the public hearing on it.
Okay. Is that standard?
No. But referring it back to the committee without making any changes was the not standard. So you're approving a law.
But when you say only laws and rules can set a public hearing, that I don't believe has been the practice in the past, has it?
Right. So the local law is sent to you guys, but laws and rules sets a public hearing. That's how it was explained to me.
Yeah, I don't know that that's right, because when we...
Because we voted on the public hearing.
We voted on setting the public hearing.
So
does it go here and then it goes moves on to them? Is that what you're saying?
To set the public hearing, but it was the local law that you were voting on.
No, we voted on setting the public hearing for sure.
The resolution to set the public hearing goes to both of you guys, but when you referred back to committee the local law, you're taking no action on it.
Right, we didn't refer the local law back to committee. We referred the resolution which was on the table back to committee, which was setting the public hearing.
Right, and you're not changing it. You know what I'm saying? At all.
I do, but I still don't know that I agree that the only laws and rules.
This
sets
is
a
what Vicky and because what happened, that's why when you look at the resolution, mm-hmm. there's extra language at the bottom.
Yep.
This, too.
So it's not going, but the point is, based on this, it's not going back to laws and rules.
It is.
There's no space for it to go back to laws and rules. It's done.
You see, the gold sheet for 222 is for laws and rules. That's why you don't have a gold sheet. This is what Vicki and Ken, because it's not covered in the rules. This particular action.
If it's not covered in the rules, then who's making the rules?
Vicki talked to Ken, who said he was going to be here that night, and said that this is, and he was going to explain it to everyone that because it was referred back to committee, right. and there were no actual changes, you were signing off on the language of the local law for laws and rules to set the public hearing on this, because they haven't seen this yet. It was pulled by you guys before it went there.
No, it passed laws and rules. It already went to laws and rules.
Right, and you did, when did you do this?
It went to laws and rules
on session,
June
16th. We did this, right?
Yeah, we did this on the night of session. It passed laws and rules. I was at
and then you pulled it and it has to go back to them.
No, and I talked to Vicki. It does not have to. Vicki's position was that it doesn't have to go back to them, which is why they're not rewritten.
Well,
Vicki's
then that position, was position that changed at some point between the last time you talked to them tonight.
I definitely have an issue with the position that only laws and rules can set a public hearing, unless someone can show me that in the rules, that only laws and rules can set a public hearing, because, in fact, this resolution... It has to go to laws and rules, went to laws and rules too, but we were passing a resolution setting a public hearing that came out of this committee. That's what our resolution was.
My understanding is the reason why they're on the resolution to begin with, energy and environment and laws and rules, is because of the public hearing.
Otherwise, laws and rules is on the resolution because it's a law, and every law has to go before laws and rules.
And public hearings, was what I was told. You could totally be right.
Yeah.
And she said this has to go back to them. They're going to vote on this on the 14th.
This is a procedural question, and it's a really important one. But the reason that it was pulled was that we didn't have some information that had been requested. So should we talk about that?
We can definitely talk about that, although the reason it was pulled was a little more complicated than that. But, yes. Okay, so because, in effect, if you recall, what happened at caucus is that a member of the caucus who passed it out of two committees called up, referred to a question that had not yet been answered, which was asked by another member who was prepared to pass this resolution. So, you know what I mean? There were other levels of things happening, which is why it was pulled. But to answer the question about the question that has not yet been answered officially is the tax cap question, which Ken Ronk had raised, and I've spoken to Ken about, and that's obviously a question that now we do need an answer on it. I spoke to Joe Del Sindico today, and their counsel is in the process of writing a paper. He's not sure that it'll be ready for tomorrow's meeting in terms of for distribution or to what level he'll be able to refer to it. Cappy and B are both researching on our end. Joe and the EIC, as they said before, are confident that it's not an issue in that it's come up with previous counties. Orange County and Westchester County have both passed it. But since the question's been raised, we're going to need a final answer, more particularly from our own council than from the EIC's council, because our council's going to be the ones who need to be comfortable with the finding. So I'm not sure if there was some discussion about whether or not an informal request would go out to the comptroller for comptroller's feedback. The executive staff seemed the deputy executive, Ken Cornell, said that that might be enough to satisfy their end, but I'm not sure what level we're going to get from anyone prior to it actually going to public hearing. Mm-hmm. We made the decision to still have Joe. Joe will be here making, because we have set a special session for tomorrow, so he'll still be making the presentation. If and when the question comes up, depending on whether he has something to circulate and whether or not B or Cappy have something to circulate, that's, you know, how firm the answer will be. But I think that I have confidence that we're going to end up with an answer one way or another. So we have, you know, we're coming at it from three separate places, and we're going to need an answer before we sign on to this. But I don't think before we have a, mm-hmm. I don't think we need the answer before we have a public hearing. And even Ken Ronk, who's been open about not necessarily being so supportive of the law as a whole.
He's always supportive of a
supportive
public hearing.
Having a public hearing. So had he been here today, he said he would have voted this out of committee. So I think we need to move it to get set for the public hearing. And, you know, if we get bad news, then we obviously, you know,
the shortest route seems to be to check with the Orange County attorney, unless they didn't raise the issue. I mean, it seems
he said
like
the issue came up, maybe I will just reach out to the both Orange County and Westchester County, or have B or Cappy do it, attorney to attorney. Maybe that would be the fastest, if they haven't done it already, because they know what
some
counties
are
already.
Yeah, and for Westchester, it's not all Westchester.
Yeah.
It's a consortium of the towns.
Right.
Because Westchester doesn't have the same taxing structure that we do.
It's the reverse. The towns and villages make the county whole. So it's a different concern. But, I mean, it might have the same concerns in terms that I would think they would also be concerned
they
about
still
the tax
have
gap.
2%.
In terms of the procedural, I don't really understand that, and I also don't understand how those decisions get made, which is something I'll need to get to the bottom of. But what's before us right now is getting it out of this committee, which I believe what we're...
So we have to move it?
Yeah, but what I'm not clear on is this gold sheet, which is saying... What I'd like to do is...
It's not your normal gold sheet.
Yeah, what I'd like to do is move this gold sheet, which says that it's approving the local law, allowing laws and rules to approve resolution number 222, but I would also like to move resolution number 222, because that's what's sent back to us. So I'd like to do both.
And this is for setting a public hearing.
Resolution 222 is for setting a public hearing.
So we'll do both, and then
resolution 222 was sent back to us. That's what we did. That's what, Manna, you and I referred resolution 222 back to committee.
Yes.
So I think we should move
that
resolution
first.
222, and then to be safe, move this gold sheet, which I don't even understand.
I'll second.
Okay. Right now we're doing resolution 222. All in favor?
Aye.
And then now let's do the gold sheet to be safe, and I'll talk to Vicki tomorrow, and Ken, maybe just so that I can pull it.
I'll move the gold sheet.
And I'll second it.
I'm going to be right back because I have that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. It's a little complicated, but sometimes I feel like it's just better to
cover your basis.
Yeah.
Better to do too much and not do too little.
Yeah. I mean, because I don't understand that laws and rules is the only one who can set a public hearing when we... I understand that they have to weigh in on all the setting a public hearing because they're the laws, but we already voted on setting a public hearing. Thank you. How convenient. So, thank you, Jay.
Mm-hmm. And here's another one.
Okay, so that being done, I wanted to give a couple updates. The first We have, I have a draft letter, and hopefully we'll get it out in the next week to go to the chambers. We discussed it at the last regarding the Climate Smart Committee manner to get a business person.
Yeah.
So I'll keep you posted on you know, any feedback we get from that, and we'll continue the search. In terms of the oil tank move, there isn't. There has not been a lot of movement, but I'll reach out to back to Kathy Hudson, because when it was decided that we weren't going to get it set for this,
you know what happened yesterday?
This meeting, it got crazy in the last couple of weeks. But I'll reach out.
But you know what happened yesterday? The going to Stories and Railroad Track, there's, I think it's Perrico. Mm-hmm. One of their trucks was on fire. Had a thing. They had to stop the trains.
Oh really?
So it didn't pass till they got that under control. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll reach out to Kate Hudson, and I'll keep everyone posted on next steps on that. The letter going out.
Yeah,
and then I also just, we're backing up a little. It's kind of old business, but man, I wanted to, and also to get it into the record, Tim talked about the Delaware tour, and it was amazing.
It was.
Crazy, mind-bogglingly amazing. I mean, until I got to the end and was holding the compost in my hand and smelling it, I still was looking at it like, I can't believe this is garbage, that this is diapers and garbage. And as I've been describing it to people, even Ken Ronk over the phone, I was like, no, we're talking about the garbage. Like, everyone's thinking of it as something that's been sifted out in some earlier stage, and you walk through the process. I mean, the one downfall is that it is pretty smelly in the earliest parts of the process, where it goes through the first tubes, and it's spun, but
there's not a lot of neighbors.
But what's going to landfill is really plastic bags.
Plastic bags. That's stuff what that doesn't make it. Yeah, and then these, and some pellet-sized pieces. 65% is made into compost, and all of it gets sold.
But they would have had a higher quality compost and been able to do more with it if there
with
was
the plastic bag,
without
the
glass.
Yes, that's
they said
true.
There was a percentage of glass that got into it because, you know, if people were better about.
And they also had a problem with cloth, like any clothes that get thrown out, which I feel like would involve like a pretty substantial public education piece, just to say, please separate out your clothes, not because it's a law, but because it messes up our system. But it costs $22 million. It's a totally different structure than we have. They use their 1% sales tax to fund the solid waste, the whole agency. They are building a new MRF and paying cash for it.
And she was pretty incredible.
Yeah, she was really amazing. Building a new earth and paying cash for it, they have a pretty substantial, because they get the whole 1%, they have a pretty substantial reserve. They charge zero for the tipping fee, zero, which is also amazing. And they've extended the life of their landfill. They came to this decision because their landfill was filling up and they needed to find something, and they've extended their life of their landfill by 30 years. It's really, you know, when I see things like that, I'm so excited, which is so crazy to be excited by garbage. But I just, such hope for.
But you know what too is like, look at all the birds that were there on the animal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, because usually you think of landfill and like desolate, no life. But there was like plants and trees, and there was,
and they have a wetland on the outside of it, and. They have a buffer. They also have snowmobile trails, like when we went to see Oneida Herkimer, which I thought was interesting, on the property. Really, the magic, and it seemed like magic, of watching this garbage leave the tipping room floor and walking its path through the building and ending. I mean, the last step prior to the compost, Muriel attested to this, is this 200 by 200 foot room with 10 foot wide, 10 foot high, you know, long rows.
Aerated,
right. And they send like a rototiller down.
Yeah.
And on one end, they're sending in the waste that's made it that far, the 65%. And on the other end, they're shooting sludge on the other end, and you're standing in this hot room filled with, you know, soon to be compost, and still it's like.
And she was so funny because she, walk out the woman, like with her bare hands, picks it up and she goes, "Feel it, see it's warm." And I'm kind of like, "Okay."
And then we
leave you.
I can feel it coming off. Yep. Yeah, the heat coming off of it was unbelievable. Yeah.
And then
yeah.
the
yeah.
final product, no smell.
Yeah.
Crazy yep. stuff.
I remember when I was the recycling coordinator, we set up a compost at Ulster County Fair, and. You know, we had one that was made of chicken wire and one that was made of concrete blocks and all these other. And I realized they had animal bedding there. And so instead of just layering leaves and food and leaves, and the food was from all the vendors, I went and I got some manure-stained animal bedding. And I put it in the pile, and the next day I came back and there was a stake in the middle of the pile that said compost pile, because that one wasn't anything special, it was just layered compost. And the stick fell over and there was steam coming out of the pile. In 3 days we had a hot cooking compost pile thanks to the manure stained animal bedding. And we were written up as the best fair from Maine to Florida.
Amazing.
In terms of our recycling and composting. But yeah, there's a tremendous potential, and there are many different systems. And
I just have to say, I feel like, and that's why I really want people to go back to Oneida Herkimer too. I know that there's a lot of skepticism in this legislature about siting a landfill or any larger anything, yeah. idea beyond just continuing to do what we
check
do.
Check it out and pay millions of dollars. And
but I have to believe if people actually got on that bus and saw it, that it would start to change minds, because it really, I almost feel like it brings tears to my eyes.
Especially like, you would want to take like supervisors with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the bottom line, it's going to be a forward-thinking supervisor if it's going to, you know, try to move it forward. Because it's not what you think it is.
And I maybe we should talk about that in future months, about the idea of coordinating a trip that extends beyond this committee. I mean, we've reached out beyond this committee, but I think it really would be beneficial to start to open people's eyes to what, and absolutely extend it to all the supervisors.
And so. We really only have about a year, because at some point, the DEC is going to release their comments, and we're going to have to get real serious about a plan. And my guess is that their plan right now is to continue to export waste for the next 20.
I know that it does not have the siting of a landfill.
And that is such a waste of resources and so counter.
Over such a long, it's just too long of a time commitment to, you know. You do need time.
You're not solving the problem.
You probably need 10 years to even get it moving. But
that's what they said, but still, then you have to start working.
The main thing is, if everyone would work together, we can do it as fast. I mean, you still have to go through permitting.
The process.
But if people are going to fight for 5 years, then it's going to take longer. But if we can find a way to really get people working together, I think ultimately...
But with that issue, sometimes people just fight to fight. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's not really that they're basing it on anything. They're just...
But that's these are different times than 20 years ago. 20 years ago, nobody wanted it. Mm-hmm. Now...
Well, I don't know. Look how what happened with Carl Chipman.
Yeah.
When he had said that, you know, they would kind of welcome it, you know, and...
In Rochester?
Yeah. That he wasn't saying that the next day.
not
good.
A host community, as Charlie Landy says, a host community benefit, you know, well-constructed host community benefit in these economic times.
Well, that's what I'm saying. A forward-thinking supervisor is going to,
Maybe we can all start thinking about how, because time will be of the essence, I mean, maybe we can start thinking about how we continue
and
this
dialogue.
And I also
think now, don't you think that the qualifications for the property and different things have probably changed as technology has changed with the whole thing.
Definitely. But we should plan another Delaware trip as well.
We should plan another trip.
Yeah, another Delaware trip.
It seems like that you make a video.
I know. But you know what? I think a video, it just, like I said, It wouldn't have the same effect because having being there and walking through and seeing it, seeing the heat and feeling the heat and the smell.
But then getting to the end, you're not going to get some people to go, so it would be good to have that. But you know, also she was so passionate about it, and so was the guy that was headed the stuff with her too. So it wasn't like, you know what I mean? It wasn't really just a job to them.
No.
They were passionate about it. You know, it was just really.
Who are you supposed to put clothes?
Oh, they're in the garbage. They get pulled out. I mean,
They try to.
They try to hand pull out tarps and ropes and fabrics if they can. But then after the first phase, you know, it comes from the tipping room floor, it goes in this hole, and it kind of goes up the first tube, which is in there for 24 hours. After that first phase, it spits out. It looked basically like a plastic bag monster. You know what I mean? Just like all shredded plastic bags. That's what didn't make. And then it goes down another tube. It's probably 200 feet long, at least 100 feet long. I don't know. I mean, very, very long and very wide, 25 foot across. And that takes 3 days. And the temperatures range from 100, I want to say they said 105 to 150. All natural. It's not heated. And in that last room, it's sustained temperatures at, you know,
140,
150 for days. Yeah, it spends 50, to I think kill 54 the days in, the last, in that last room, 54 days. So, it's got to see it to believe it, really. Yeah. We really do, because a video would be like,
it's
I think
you
could be disassociated
all over the place afterwards.
Watching
you just can't even believe.
Crazy.
Yeah, your senses get engaged.
It's amazing.
But I'm sorry, I have another meeting. Can I make a motion?
Yeah. Good. I think
we make a motion to
adjourn.
Yeah, sure.
Second time?
Yes.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane, very much for...
Hello.